How do I love and reach out to pimps and prostitutes who might be a part of my local community? Let's find out next on the Monday Christian Podcast.
You're listening to the Monday Christian Podcast, the program dedicated to helping you put into action the truth of God's Word that you hear on Sunday to your everyday life on Monday. And now, here's your host, Ezra Beyer.
Well, hi there, and welcome to the Monday Christian Podcast. It's so good to have you again, and this is our fifth episode, so we're rolling right along here. And we've covered some cool topics, and it's been really just interesting as the interviewer to sit down with different people and hear their various thoughts and ideas. And I trust it's been helpful to you, and if it has, just do me a favor. Go over to iTunes or maybe Google Play, whatever device you use, and just leave a positive review there. And that would just help me out a lot, and would help us just generate some more traffic there. And because iTunes and Google Play, they kind of rank these podcasts based on the reviews that are left. So that would help out a lot. But hey, today, let's go ahead and just jump into the podcast that we have lined up. And today I'm bringing on my friend Emily Jones. And Emily, she has her master's degree in social work, and she studied, worked, volunteered with the issue of human sex trafficking for about 8 years now. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring her on was, number one, she's so passionate about this issue, but it also raises a high awareness for us as just Monday Christians, Monday followers of Christ, where we want to live out the teachings of Christ all throughout the week, and helps raise our awareness that there is a lot of injustice around us. No doubt that if you live in a city or close to a city, you've been driving down a dark street at night and you've seen some of the rougher sections of town, and you know what goes on, especially in those rough sections. But sometimes we fail to remember that there's injustice happening all around us, and Emily will get into that today. So let's go ahead and jump right into this interview. I think you're going to enjoy it. All right, today on the podcast, I have my friend Emily Jones on, and I've known Emily now here for a number of years, went to the same school together in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Emily, hey, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor, and I hope I can answer these questions effectively.
Well, we were just talking just off air here before we started this, that one of the reasons that I do this podcast is just because, selfishly, I want to hear answers to some of the questions that I have. And if anyone else wants to listen, then they're welcome to do so as well.
Yeah.
But how did you even come to faith in Christ? How did that journey start for you?
I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was a pastor of a small country church. And I got saved when I was maybe 6 or 7. But at, you know, the first couple years, you just kind of go along with what your parents say, you do what your parents tell you to. But at 16, I remember not really a life-changing moment, but I remember when my decision started to really weigh on me. I knew I was deciding what was right and wrong. And I probably should have and did realize that somewhat earlier, but at 16, that really took a hold on my life. And then God really began to work and change and lead me. So that's kind of the evolving story of how that happened.
So you kind of went through your journey. And so 16 years of age, I think I was probably around a similar age when I started getting serious with God. Mm-hmm. And let's just, before we get into all we were going to talk about, how did becoming a true follower of Christ in your teenage years, speak to maybe a teen that might be listening, how was that? How did that impact your life as opposed to maybe waiting to your 20s or 30s?
Well, I'm sure it impacted my life in a lot of ways. And right from the beginning, you know, I had a best friend who was just months younger than I was, and maybe a year, but I don't think she was even a year younger than me. And we were good friends. We were on somewhat different paths from different homes. But it was amazing to see at that age, as that started to really affect me and kind of lead me in one direction. She sadly made decisions in another direction. And that is continuing to have, in her situation, it's had really negative impacts on where she's at in life. And I trust and I keep praying for her. And I know at some point God's going to bring her back around. She's going to come back. But you know, that's still impacting her, and I'm 27, so she would be just younger than me. So, you know, how the direction you choose as a young kid and as a teenager, when you really start to make your own decisions, that impacts you for years. And, you know, the decisions she's made that are negatively impacting her now are going to negatively affect her for a long time. So it matters what you're choosing now.
Yeah, and I can definitely resonate with that. Well, I'm 27 as well, and when growing up, I can just see different choices that maybe my friends, some mm-hmm. make great choices, others maybe not so much, and it's tough, you know, mm-hmm. and you can definitely see the results of that. Now, the reason that I wanted to bring you on was you've done a lot of work, a lot of study as well, into the whole human sex trafficking, which has become a huge problem. And mm-hmm. and today I guess we'll focus more on the North American front, although I know you've done a lot of travel as well. Why get involved in something like this? How did that start for you?
For me, it's interesting because today I am in a town that's about an hour from where I live. I came here to visit family. And this is actually the town where it started. But in 2000, well, right after high school, I went to GBS, to God's Bible School, and was there for a year. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. But my family had foster kids when I was a teenager, so I had some interest in social work. I came back home, and in 2009, it would have been my sophomore year of college, and I started attending a community college nearby to kind of just get started and figure some stuff out. And in one of my classes, it was actually a sociology, I think it was, and I had a really liberal teacher. It was thought-provoking, but it was good. It helped stretch me and helped me think about things like this that we don't generally think about. And we watched a movie one day for class, and I remember during the movie, I mean, it was graphic. It was very disturbing. But I got up and left because I was angry that we were watching such a movie in class. And
was it about sex trafficking? Was that
it was
the movie was about?
It was, wow. And it's not one that I usually recommend. but you know, it's hard because sometimes that's what we need to push us over the edge and get us moving. And I knew nothing about it. It's not like I knew about it, wasn't doing something. I had no idea. So I went to the computer lab until class was over, and I came back, and I kind of I questioned my teacher up and down why we were watching such a movie in class. You know, I didn't think it was appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. And she just flat out told me it was a real issue, and it was something we were going to talk about for the next couple of weeks. And so I went back to the computer lab, and I Googled some more before I went home, and that's literally how it started. It's been 8 years, and I remember at the very beginning, you know, I had no idea what this was. It was horrible. It was evil. It was insane. As I started to get into this, coming from somewhere and not having any idea what it was. And I went home, and I remember, I don't know if it was that night or a couple nights later, we were having a bonfire. And I, like I said, my dad was a pastor. And I remember almost sobbing around the bonfire while I was sitting there with my dad about why I grew up in a Christian home and had no idea that this existed. You know, and he, I think to an extent, he felt bad, and I could see that. And he had no idea either. He told me he had no idea really what this was. But from the very beginning, I prayed that God would not let it be something that kind of flashed into my life and left. I didn't want it to be a flame that went out. And God has been very faithful to that. It's 8 years later, and he continues to not only keep that passion there, but to open doors, to give me opportunities I never, ever would have dreamed were there.
Because it's interesting because we see that at least I think I've noticed that a number of times that particularly people of my generation will become passionate about a cause, right? A social justice cause. And the passion lasts, if we were to be honest, it lasts about as long as posting helpful topics, you know, helpful links on our Facebook page. And that's about it. And we do it for 6 months and our conscience is eased.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, yeah. On to the next thing that really seems great. But you've been passionate about this, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because you've been consistently passionate about this for now 8 years. And now, but I want to go back. When you were watching that video, why do you think initially you got up and left? And would you have the same response that today that you did back then?
Well, initially, there was a sexual assault in the movie. And that was something that resonated deeply with me then. And to this day, I don't watch, even in the sex trafficking movies, because I do watch a lot of, if a movie comes out about trafficking, I'm probably going to at least give it a try, because, you know, I'm looking for movies to recommend. And it really is, you know, there's movies out there about sex trafficking that are based on actual stories that are pretty well done. But the reason I left initially was because there was an assault in the movie, you know, and that just, I wasn't prepared for that regardless. But, you know, to this day, I probably would get up and leave for the same reasoning. But now I understand, not that I recommend people needing to see that, but now I understand how God was able to use something like that to affect my life for the rest of my life in a positive way. So to that extent, you know, there's a sense in which, you know, I have to expose myself to some traumatic things just because of what I work in. So it's complicated.
Yeah. And that's kind of, I'm sure that's the tension that you feel there, because I know I felt it in, you know, where we live in East Scarborough there, you know, we have different, whether it's pimps and prostitutes, definitely we have that in our area. And the tension that you feel is, well, take Facebook, for instance, in social media. I've seen different times people will post links that are anti-sex trafficking, but then in the link, it's like, you know, it's almost a pornographic image that they post in the process. And it's kind of like you're in this tension where you want to understand this world to be able to help. But on the same hand, you don't want to fill your mind with all the junk and the filth that's involved with that. And so just talk to this person who says, okay, Emily, this isn't my world. I'm actually about as far away from this world as possible. And so there's several reasons. For my family's sake, I don't want to get involved in this because, you know, there could be some dangers from that perspective. And another just practical reason, I don't even know where to start. I don't know the steps that I should take to engage, whether it's a pimp or a prostitute in my area. I don't even know how to do that. So what would you say to a person that kind of has that feeling?
First of all, it is your world, and it's all about whether you choose to walk by and ignore, or whether it's if you choose to engage, and it's what it comes down to. And the reason I say that is because, you know, sexual trafficking and labor too. I mean, there is this, I know I've focused on sex trafficking for years, and that's namely because that's what I first got introduced to. But labor trafficking is another huge piece that we have to address in the work. But sex trafficking specifically, that can be in your neighbor's house. That can be a secret of your favorite waiter or waitress at the restaurant you go to every week. It can be on Facebook, on Backpage, on YouTube. It can be on Craigslist. It can be affecting your children and you're not knowing it. So you can't walk by and say it's not your issue.
and that's one of my points. Is so because typically I think, I'll go out on a limb here, but I think when a lot of people think of sex trafficking, I'm sure I've been guilty of this as well. I think of it as, okay, it's that case where there is a prostitute, you know, in this particular rough neighborhood, but you're saying it's all around us.
It is. And I think another thing to point out, and you mentioned prostitution, One thing to point out is that sex trafficking and prostitution are not exactly the same thing, because prostitution is not always trafficking. And I know prostitution isn't something that we, you know, see as a great thing or a good thing or a good choice by any means. But it can ruin lives. But sometimes women, not because they want to, but because they feel they have no other choice, mm-hmm. will be prostituting. But that doesn't mean they're being trafficked.
Right.
But yet we have a lot of pimps and men and women who take advantage of other men and women and prostitute them. And that is trafficking, because they are selling that person for sex and taking all their money and keeping them under control.
Right.
So and that's why I said, you know, this is going to be a deep topic, because there's so many ways you can kind of pick that apart. But I did want to go back to as well, people who are afraid of getting too close to it or addressing it or addressing these people because of safety issues. And I definitely understand that. You know, I don't have kids, but one thing I've always thought of, even before I was married, was, you know, even then I wanted to travel the world and work with this type of issue. I still do. And I'm starting to get some of those opportunities, and I don't want to take a little kid overseas where they actually could just ambush and take my child, because I'm trying to help their products, their women, or whatever, however you want to phrase that, because I'm trying to help them. I don't want, you know, repercussion on my family. And you know, that can be even here. You can have those fears, and they can be legitimate. But I think for me, I've always been taught, and I've always 100% believed, that safety is in the middle of God's will. And, you know, this isn't a safe issue, but this isn't a safe world either. So you just have to know that what you're doing is what God's called you to do. And if you're doing what God's called you to do, He's going to go with you. He's going to go before you. Don't go around God. Don't go past God. If He says wait, you need to wait. And it with anything, but this issue is so, it can be scary, but it's so specific and so dark that you cannot go out there and try to engage this without being covered in prayer. But if God opens the door for you, He's gonna go with you through it.
And so, kind of jumping back here again, maybe you want to walk through some of the stats, that would be helpful as well. But talk us through the process and of how a young girl, in specifically the North American context, a young boy, how is it that they can be trafficked? What are the most common ways that this happens? And maybe go into some of the ways that you mentioned, you know, things like Craigslist. Go into some of the ways that maybe it's happening around us that we otherwise ordinarily probably wouldn't think about.
When it comes to statistics, unfortunately, it's very, there's not a good place to get statistics, because it's an underground issue. It's an illegal trade. It's How do you really get a hold of those statistics?
Right.
Now, overall, like, the general statistic right now is that there's 20.9 million slaves in the world today. But that's labor, that's sexual, that's across the world. You know, one stat I've heard in the past was that there was 300,000 to 500,000 children at risk of being sexually trafficked every year. However, that also has been redacted even by the authors who wrote that research. So that's not a true stat anymore either. And I don't know that it ever was correct. You know, some other false stats, I'm going to start with those because we don't know exact true stats. But another thing that I've heard a lot of, and people may hear it for whatever state you live in or in Canada. But I've heard a lot that Michigan is number one in the U.S. for sex trafficking, or that Michigan is number five, or Michigan is number seven. But I was at a conference in May where there was a speaker there who has traveled internationally to study trafficking. And he was pointing out the incorrectness of that stat. And he was saying that, you know, in the U.S., only certain states are actually taking these statistics, or only certain ones are researching the issue. So when we've got five states that are researching numbers of sexual trafficking encounters, if you have 10 states and Michigan is number five, you can't say Michigan's number five in the U.S. if you have three states and you say Michigan is number one,
yeah,
that's extremely incorrect, and it's giving a very false narrative for what's really going on.
Right.
So for people who've heard those, number one, those stats are incorrect. For ones that are correct, I have a really hard time actually tracking these stats myself, and I try to do this quite regularly. But one place I go to is the Polaris Project, and that's polarisproject.org. And that's for, I think that it's mainly in the U.S., but they do have international, they watch internationally. They don't necessarily work internationally, I don't think, but they have some of those big statistics, like 20.9 internationally. But they're a good place to watch simply because they have a call center and a resource center where if you think someone's being trafficked, if you know someone is, if you have a question or concern, you can actually call their hotline number and they will either get you to help or get you the resources, whatever you're needing. But one thing that comes from that, helpfully, in terms of stats, is they track how many calls they get. How many calls are reports? How many calls are people calling for help? How many calls lead to an actual rescue or someone actually getting brought out? So that's helpful in terms of trying to find, you know, something that's,
yeah,
it's a true stat.
Well, and it's tough to know. Yeah, I totally get that. It's tough to get an accurate count because the whole process by its very nature is underground. Now, a follow-up question to that, just talk about your own personal experience and in working. The distinction between, you know, there are, that you made earlier with between just prostitution and then sex trafficking, sometimes they're intermingled, but sometimes they aren't. And I want you to talk, what, I know, it's tough to put a percentage on that, but with the number of people that you've come across, is there, you know, a rough ratio as to the number of them that would of prostitutes that are being used by, whether it's a pimp? What are the details on that?
Well, that's where it gets really complicated again, because it really depends on your background and how you're viewing that issue. And how just kind of your belief system on it, because some people believe that prostitution is it's just another job, albeit a not a good job or maybe a right job. But some people view it as just a type of employment. Some people view it as.
Do you run into a number of people like that?
I have run into a lot of people who would say that, not who are actually prostitutes, but just people who that's their belief system. Yes. But probably mainly because I have my master's degree in social work. So for 5 years of schooling in a liberal field like that, I've met a lot of people who kind of feel that way. And I can understand that argument. I don't believe that. I can understand it and kind of see where they might be coming from. Because sure, we can say that, you know, if a woman has three kids, her husband died, her husband left her, and she has no money, she has no schooling, she has no way to make money, her kids are going to starve to death, she has no family, you know, around to help, and she thinks that's her only option, and so that's what she does for employment. Some people would say that that is, you know, that's how they would view that as employment. Other people would say that woman is being exploited by anyone who is pimping her or managing her, and by the men or women who are buying her. So she's not, it's not a valid form of employment because she's being exploited, which I think in any case of prostitution, there is exploitation. So that's kind of where I more tend to fall on that.
I see what you're saying there.
Yeah. Now in terms of trafficking and prostitution, again, it comes down to, is someone forcing you and is someone taking your money for that? And it also comes down to, is someone transporting you for that? And that's where we're going to kind of get into the actual definition of trafficking. And I don't even know if I can rattle the whole thing off, and that'd be boring anyways. But that is more specifically if someone is forcing you, it's force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of exploitation, or even if that's organ trafficking, sexual trafficking, labor trafficking, by means of, you know, whether they're transporting you somewhere else for that. Now, that can be across state lines. That can be international lines. That can even be from one end of the state to the other. So if someone, you know, picks up a, and we've had cases like this in Michigan, several that I know of, where someone, you know, we had one right in this town that I'm sitting in, and I'm sure it's not the only one, but it's one I know of. A couple girls ran away from a youth home, met a guy at the park, and, you know, through a series of events ended up in a way different part of the state and ended up being, one was sexually assaulted, being trafficked, essentially, being sold where they were at, or attempting, the guy was attempting to, and I'm not sure how far that got along, because thank God, in a very rare set of circumstances, they were rescued just days after they were taken. But that doesn't happen very often, you know, and I know of several cases of prostitution, you know, that prostitution word, where they were taken from Detroit area to Traverse City, which is essentially, that would be southeast all the way to northwest, and they were sold there. Against their will. And there was just a study that I, or a case that I heard presented at a conference I was at last year by the police up in that area. So, you know, it gets complicated.
Yeah. Well, so there's basically, if I'm hearing you right, there's basically the two levels where you get this, the most severe level is they're taking, whether it's girls or boys, and then exploiting them, and then taking their money, and then basically threatening them and saying, if you go back, then so there's that level. But then there's the level where it's also exploitation, but there's kind of the consent of the person going into it and saying, this is how I'm going to support my family. Yeah. So I guess a follow-up question I guess I would have there is, how do we as the church, how do we as Christians, mm-hmm. followers of Christ, how do we reach out to, let's take, for instance, the young mom. Mm-hmm. She has two kids. And if truth were told, she really doesn't want to be a prostitute. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't know any mm-hmm. other way right now. So how do we reach out to a person like that?
It gets hard. Because we have, I mean, an extreme level of generosity, I guess, is all I know to say. That's one I'd have to think about for a moment. But, you know, if she really feels like she has no other way, you know, we may look at her case and say, you know, there really is a different way. We could figure something out. Although it may take us a lot of brainstorming, because you haven't been in that position where you're trying to feed several little kids and yourself and clothe them and send them to school on money you're making from McDonald's. Is that possible? That may not be possible. Like, you know, so it would take us time to brainstorm those questions. But I would say just an extreme level of generosity. We have to be prepared to not only, you know, maybe pick up groceries for her as a family, you know, semi-regularly. Say, you know, I know you're going through a hard time. We want to try to fill in the gap. And I'm not saying put yourself out there to be exploited yourself and be buying groceries for some other family for the rest of your life.
Right.
I'm just saying, let them know that you're helping fill in this gap. And in the meantime, help her start classes at community college where she can get a job based on what she's going to school for. Help her get a job at the local McDonald's and then supplement her by offering some additional assistance for if you own a store, let her work some hours at your store. Or if you you know someone you can advocate for her on behalf of.
Yeah.
If you know someone who does own a business, let them know, hey, I know she may not have the experience, but I'm really trying to help her out. How can I vouch for her to get her some extra, you know, hours right now? You know, invite them over for Christmas, invite them over for Thanksgiving, invite them over for your kid's birthday, anything to just build that relationship and then all those other blocks on top of it. Because, you know, it really does come down to being real and having that relationship, you know, and no matter what area we're coming at this from, that really is where it comes down to. If this was your kid that was having an issue, you know, taking care of their family, how would you help them?
That makes a lot of sense. I guess practical.
Gotta be creative.
A practical follow up. I'm guessing that several guys that would be listening to this would be saying is, okay, because I'll just speak for myself. Whenever I see prostitution, there's something about it that just makes me really angry. All right, mm-hmm. The whole situation makes me really angry. And so you want to get involved, but then there's the question, okay, well, how do I get involved? All right, especially as a guy. So how do I do that? Mm-hmm. What tips you and your husband Ken, you both have worked in this now for a number of years. Mm-hmm. What are ways, just practical steps that you would offer that couples could take?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important question, and again, that's kind of a complicated one. And for all of these questions, I will reiterate again, you have to be prayed up and make your own decisions of God on how you're doing this. And especially with something like this, because, you know, I know family and friends who face this question where, sure, they kind of want to get involved. And if this wasn't an issue, they might get involved more. But yes, they're male or they're married to a guy who, how do you safely do that? And again,
yeah, because you want to protect your family on one hand, right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For sure, it's not a safe issue. It's not a safe world. But for us, and I'll only say this is for us, how we've, you know, figured it out. You know, if you know those links that are on Facebook and it has a graphic image, go somewhere else. But don't just scroll by and say, okay, that's graphic. That is not an excuse. That is not something you can get a pass with. But go out of Facebook and Google. Google those statistics, that whatever was in the headline, Google that. Because most likely that's some spinoff website anyways. That's not like a legit national website that has information on it. Go to Polaris Project, which is Polaris Project.org. Go to the United States Department of Health and Human Services has a page on trafficking. You know, so kind of go find other places to go to. For other issues, like we've done one street outreach with a group that I was kind of running about a year ago. We did a street outreach in Indianapolis where we actually went and walked the streets with pimps and prostitutes from 11 p.m. until 4 a.m. And that was with another church group that had that church right there on that street. But, you know, for that one, we had several guys involved, but we were very strategic in placing, I mean, we didn't have a guys-only group. We had guys and girls go together. We had a time of prayer and worship and Bible reading before we went out. We had structured before we went to have 24-hour prayer coverage while we were preparing and while we were on the street. You know, and again, it's not just guys. I mean, girls are going to have one area of temptation for this, and guys are going to have a different area, but it doesn't mean that girls aren't going to have any issues. So girls and guys need to be prayed up. You know, when it comes to when we were interacting with the people on the street, generally myself or one of the other females approached the women. We didn't send the guys to approach the women. Although sometimes they would more easily approach the men because they, you know, they had a different purpose, but they didn't know why that guy was there. So, hey, but for us, they knew we were probably there to try to talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you have to be really, you have to use wisdom and you have to ask God how he's going to get you involved with it. But I would say again.
One question I have, I guess, is you talk about prayer. And I've heard this in my whole life, right? You know, pray but talk about the role that prayer plays and how that works with the way that, you know, that you choose to interact with people. Because I think sometimes we use prayer as basically, I prayed about it as a default for saying that, okay, this is a blessing on my decisions. And basically just says, I prayed about it, so that's my stamp, and that must mean that my decision is right. But talk about when you say you and Ken will pray about things. How has God formed your thinking? How has God formed your compassion through your prayers?
Well, I will say this. God is definitely still forming my prayer life and teaching me through my prayer life because, and this is kind of just to throw this out there. You know, some people feel like they pray and God gives them a definite lightning bolt. Like they know what the right thing to do is. And that's great. I wish that I was like that.
Yeah, me too.
I wish that's how my life worked. But that's not how God has used prayer in my life. You know, for me, you know, I'm praying about a big decision in my life right now. And I'm like, God, if you could, really, if you could just come on and like make this clear, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. And I think a lot of times, that's so that we can learn to be more tender to the Holy Spirit and what he's trying to tell us without him having to flash it across the front of our house. But, you know, Kenny and I will pray about something. We'll talk to his parents. We'll talk to my parents. And generally this is me kind of going out because, you know, we'll pray together, but I like to have these conversations with other people too. But my parents, his parents, trusted people that we know. Older Christians who have years of wisdom, you know, will take time. Don't make an immediate decision, especially on something like this. Don't make an immediate decision. Don't see something on Facebook and decide you're going to do a street outreach to prostitutes the next night.
Yeah.
maybe even the next week or next month, you better be really considering, your decisions. But I think through that, like really just kind of checking off some of those things. Have you prayed about it for, you know, at least some lengths of time? Have you talked to some, it doesn't have to be your parents, it doesn't have to be your grandparents, but whoever you know that's an older Christian who you can respect their decisions and you can trust their, you know, what they're going to tell you. And I think God will kind of mold us through that and mold our prayer lives through that because he teaches us something new through each of those encounters, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
fascinating because I like talking to people that have say they pray about things when you can see that they've put things into action. I love a quote from Mark Batterson. I don't think it's his originally, but he said it to me on one occasion when I was visiting National Community Church. He said, "Pray like it depends on God, work like it depends on you." And I think usually when things, when they kind of stagnate in our lives, it can be because we don't do one of those two things. And that begins to break down.
I think that's a great quote. And I do think going back to how some people just instantly know, you know, and again, I am not that type of person where I instantly know what I'm supposed to do. And Kenny isn't either. So we struggle that way sometimes. But I think if you're following those check marks of making sure that you have been praying, you've been asking other people to pray for you, seeking wisdom, then my mom always says, and I love this, is that take a step forward, a baby step forward, and see if God gives you a red light or a yellow light or a green light. You can't just sit there and hope that something happens because he's not going to most likely, this does happen, but he's not going to just fling the doors wide open while you sit at home on your couch hoping that something happens.
Yeah, no, totally. I've seen that over and over again where it seems like you'll take a step. And what's funny is often you'll take a step and maybe that idea that you had, you know, you'll take a step of faith and do something, and that maybe that doesn't move forward like you thought. But then all of a sudden, God opens up another door in a completely new area. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen so many times in my life, and I don't think that's a coincidence that when we step, it's not just about the step that we're taking. It's that, in a way, we're making a bold declaration to God that, God, we want to be usable wherever you want us to be. And so,
And you know, I hope this isn't a bunny trail, but one fun incident of that I've had just in the last year, I started where I work now. I work as a hospital emergency room social worker. And I started almost exactly a year ago. And in March, I got an email that had an application in it. It's kind of like, hey, for the whole hospital staff, where we have this scholarship where we'd love to promote an idea, help people develop a program. So anybody can apply. You get these couple incentives. You get a $5,000 to make it happen. And I was like, oh, well, this would be fun. And I tend to always be like right there, ready to do those things. And I sit back later and think, oh, that was too big of a bite I bit off.
Yeah.
But you know, and God always works it out and he helps me through them, and they're always good opportunities. But I prayed about it. I had like a month. So I prayed about it and I was like, well, I don't know. It's a big decision. Talked to Kenny about it. I might have mentioned it to my mom. This one didn't seem like that huge of a decision for me. So I went to work and I wrote the application and rewrote about 10 times. Finally sent it in like the night before it had to be due. And then I promptly forgot about it. Because it had said that there'd be preference to veterans, you know, so I was like, okay, there's veterans in this hospital. I'm not going to get this, but hey, I got to throw my idea out there so they know what I'm interested in. And I got called into the vice president's office like a month later. And I initially thought, okay, this is just like one of those initial interviews. They're going to give me 5 seconds to talk. And then, you know, at least I'm getting this out there. And I went to her office and I had won that scholarship.
Wow.
So I'm in process of this scholarship right now. It's a 2-year thing where I'm developing education, intervention, and identification intervention opportunities within the hospital, specifically the emergency room, so our staff know what to do. And, you know, that's one of those decisions where I didn't see it coming. And I just kind of took those baby steps and I was like, I kept praying while I turned it in. God, if this is not right, you have got to stop it. Like, don't let it get there. Help them not to choose me if this is not the right thing.
That's cool. That's really cool.
It was neat. And it's neat to see how God can use that little step of faith. Just take one little tiny step. And I'm not saying that story to brag on me at all. I'm just saying that's kind of how I work. But again, the whole time it was out there, I was saying, God, you really have to stop this. If this is not what you want me to do, you need to intervene.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was awesome. Listening for him to say no, but, you know, at that point he let me go and it's been a neat opportunity. So we're going with it. So
that's awesome. Well, that was a good rabbit trail to go down because I think that's really, that is really helpful for people because prayer is so important with the topic that we're talking about. Kind of coming back here, we talked about the prostitution side of things. Let's talk about the group of people that I have a harder time feeling compassion for, and that's the pimps of the industry. And so, number one, talk about what is a pimp? What is their lifestyle like?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard one.
I know it's very diverse, but what are the main reasons that maybe a pimp gets into doing what they do?
Well, you know, first of all, and it is hard for me as well because when I first started this, I felt nothing but hatred, ashamedly. And God has continued to work on me and show me that these are people too. And, you know, something that God continues to kind of show me, especially in my line of work with trauma, is that these pimps and these men that exploit have some major trauma or hole in their heart or need, just like everybody else. You know, they probably didn't wake up one day saying that's what they wanted to do without having some major event that kind of push them down that trail.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that they're excusable. I'm not saying this gives them a reason. I'm not saying that I understand why they do it. I'm just saying we have to view them as people with hurts, just like we view the women as people with hurts. Just like I view the person who cuts me off down the road as someone who maybe is having a hard day.
Yeah.
Doesn't excuse it. It just kind of gives you some background to it. But going from there, you know, I think, you know, there's different types of pimps. There we have what we call a boyfriend pimp, who is someone who will romantically get involved with a girl. And then maybe, you know, shower her with gifts, shower her with compliments. You know, maybe they'll move in together shortly thereafter. And then he starts to say, you know, I really can't afford this rent. I'm trying to take care of both of us. I can't afford it like I thought I could. You know, you could make some extra money for us if you just go down the road and work at the strip club. It's really not that bad. You know, you already do this for me at home. It's not a big deal.
Right.
And they will talk and push that girl into eventually going and doing that, you know, and then take her money and kind of work her into a place of submission where then they're taking all the money and, you know, then they kind of switch over and they start calling the girl useless and worthless and she's a whore and she's this horrible person because of what she's doing. So they take that and they spin it on you. And then you might have a situation where it's more of what we call a gorilla pimp, who's someone who just flat out kidnaps a girl walking down the street and will beat her within an inch of her life to force her to do this work. And they may, you know, he may keep her and beat her and assault her for weeks before he has, you know, gotten her to a point where he has ripped her soul out enough that she really thinks that it's not an option to go back. It's not an option to ever be normal again. She's just going to go out in the street and do what he asks. You know, so these are where those men are coming from. you know, and there's a couple other styles that you might see, but those are two major ones. And when it comes to trying to interact with this population, you know, I don't have very much experience with that. But one neat thing that I have heard of, it's by an organization that I'm familiar with. They, and this is overseas, but it could work here. They had a banquet for the pimps in their city that were exploiting the girls that they were also working with.
Wow.
They had a banquet just for these men. And, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of how they planned that, how they held that. But, you know, what a neat opportunity to love on those men, to tell those men, you know, we see you and we can love you too. Jesus loves you too. We're not holding your sins against you. We don't hate you. To start building those relationships so that later, you know, if an opportunity comes up, you can build a little deeper relationship and start some of that outreach to them.
Because so. I think it's, I'll just speak for myself here, but I find it very easy to have compassion towards people that we can see that are hurting and that maybe don't want to be in their situation. But it's a lot tougher to have compassion for the people that are putting others through hurt. And so talk about the balance there, because on one hand, we want to see justice done.
That is a tough one to balance. And I think, that is a tough one to balance. You know, if someone steals something at the grocery store and then comes to your church and tells you they're sorry and they don't want to do that anymore, you're going to accept them and you're going to love them and you're going to say, hey, you know what? That's okay. We all mess up. But then you're going to say, let's go to the store together and make this right. Like you're going to help them turn that around.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when you first are engaging with this population, they're probably not going to say, hey, man, this is a bad decision. I feel bad about what I did. I need to make it right. You know, so it's just like working with the prostitutes. They're not going to immediately turn around and say, hey, this is bad decision. Because it gets to a point where for both sides, it's okay. They've worn themselves down enough that it's normal. It's okay. They're fine with it. You know, and so we just have to just walk the road with them, I guess. Just build that relationship. When you start to see that they're starting to turn and wanting to make the right decisions, maybe you can start talking with them. But that's going to be way down the road when you have a relationship. You know, just like with a friend of yours, if you don't really know them that well, you're probably not going to be like, hey, man, that was wrong. You need to go fix that. You're going to build that relationship first and then say,
yeah,
you know, I know you've changed your ways. I know you're wanting to change. Here's just something that I see that maybe we could figure out how to help you, you know, make right. And, you know, on one movie, it's called Nefarious, and it's by Exodus Cry. And the reason I say that is because I've heard that there's another movie out there that may have the same title that's not good. But Nefarious is a movie by Exodus Cry, who's a Christian organization out of Missouri. And in that video, the reason I mention them is because in that video, there's a man, I think he's in Cambodia, who used to be a pimp, who is now working with kids on the street or women in the area, helping to rescue them and helping to just love on them and restore them. And he talks in that, they have a short interview, and he says how he was hurting and he was being held by chains just like they were. It was just a different type of chain. So I think we really have to show them love. I mean, as hard as that's going to be, show them love, walk that road with them, and just ask God to show you wisdom. How on earth do I show this person Jesus? How do I do that?
I think what you're saying there, that is so important, because we all like the stories of we were out in the street. And my brother-in-law, on one of the previous podcasts, he talks about this, that sometimes people would come down to, say, inner city ministry, and they would want to go to the toughest person possible and try to reach that person with the gospel. But they don't realize that person has gone through years and years to get where they're at. And there's years of layers that have just built and that are going to need to be broken down. And I think that's where the message of the gospel is really transforming. It should transform our lives really first before it transforms other lives, because we realize that God still loves us year after year after year, even when we really weren't that passionate about serving him. He cared about us all through those, maybe whether it was teen years where we weren't so fond of him or whatever, but he still loved us and reached out to us. And Janann and I have just noticed that up here in East Scarborough, where we work, the value of loving people for the long haul, that's, you can't put a price tag on that, because generally there's no instant conversions that take place. They usually happen through a series of relationships and conversations. And I love what you said about inviting people to, whether it's come into your home after praying about it, inviting them to be a part of your life, do life with them. That's huge.
Yeah. And I think, I know you have to be safe and you have to set up boundaries, but I think there's a way that we can show extravagant love. And that takes extravagant grace, I think. But, you know, if we are afraid to invite a prostitute into our home because of who she is and what she's done, you know, when we have a son or we have a husband, I understand that. And I am not at all saying that that's not something we need to address. But I don't think that we can, you know, how can we look Jesus in the face and say, well, Jesus, I had a son in my home. I couldn't invite her in.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to fly. Yeah. And I don't think when we really get in tune with God's heart for these people, that's going to fly even in our own mind. How you're going to do that, I'm not going to tell you how, because that's not my decision. How I do that would be my decision. How you do it's your decision. But just like when you don't click that link on Facebook, don't give yourself a pass that, oh, well, this issue is not quite clean enough for me to touch. Because if Jesus came and he touched our sin to get us out of it, you know, how can we say, well, you know, she's too dirty for me to interact with. They're too dirty for me to interact with when Jesus did that for us. We can't do that. And it's a little overwhelming for me to think of all the men and women who are out there with that stigma on them. And I'm not saying I haven't felt that myself in terms of like putting that stigma on people, but we have right. to let Jesus scrape through that rough surface and show us how to interact with them. And one other thing I wanted to mention, kind of going back to engaging with pimps and prostitutes and like how do we interact with them. One thing, and like kind of like what your brother-in-law said, one thing that's probably going to happen is when you walk up to them and you try to talk to them, they're going to use every swear word they know. They are going to look as mean as they can look. They're going to tell you every horror story, or maybe just like the worst horror story they have about what's happened to them, what they've done, where they've been, and what they're waiting for after years of having the stigma on them by not only Christians, but just people in general. They're going to expect you to smile and turn and run away.
Yeah.
That's what they're waiting for.
That's probably what a lot of other people have done before.
That's what they do. Right. I mean, when they tell you this graphic story of them being raped and almost murdered, and that's a regular occurrence for prostitutes, when they tell you that story, or when they tell you the story of killing somebody because they were trying to rape them, or the story of them killing a prostitute, let's say we're talking to a pimp, we can't turn and run. And I know I've had moments where inside I am literally like screaming and running.
Yeah. But you're running internally. Yeah.
But on the outside, we have to work on our game face. And I mean, we have to work on a neutral face that says, wow, okay, that's an intense story. I'm sorry you went through that. Or, you know, hey, that must have been a rough experience. Or, you know, I've never been there, so I can't really say what I would have done, but man, I'm sorry. And then say, you know, hey, do you want to go grab coffee? Or, you know, move past that. I'm not saying you don't acknowledge. And if there's somebody who could potentially lash out at you and try to kill you, okay, you know, I'm not saying be stupid about it. So be safe. But if this is a person who, you know, sometimes, and I'm not, this is just kind of like, I'm just going off the top of my head, but sometimes there's stories of prostitutes murdering their pimps because they've been exploited for so long. They've been abused for so long that they react and they've now murdered their pimp. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying that's right. But I'm saying they're probably not going to attack you because that's something that they did out of safety. So we can't necessarily hold that to them to the point that we won't talk to them. You know, acknowledge that story, acknowledge the concerns that might be there, figure out how you can still safely engage. You know, can you go to a public right. coffee shop? I'm not saying go do something that's not wise, but go to a public coffee shop. Go talk to them, you know, at the church. Say, hey, do you want to stop in? We're having a women's group. You know, because it's just, again, that not turning and running. However you do that, just don't turn and run.
Yeah, well, I agree totally with what you're saying. A couple months ago, a pimp and a prostitute came in, and it could kind of sum up the situation fairly quickly, but they needed help moving. Well, so what do you do, right? So you're like, okay, well, on one hand, do you approve of everything that's going on? No, but the basic reality is they need help moving.
Yeah.
And so you try to love in that area. They disappear for a few months. You see them again. You try to, but it's just little by little.
Yeah.
And the prayers along the way.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that was long, but it's a tough topic, and it's one I'm kind of passionate about because it's hard when you see people turn and run. But another thing that's so true because, you know, she may decide 5 years down the road that she wants to get out. And she'll remember that one pastor and his wife. She may not remember your name. She may not remember exactly where you were from, but she's going to remember you, and she's going to remember there are good people out there. and that there's someone that she can probably go ask for help. And another thing is it takes a prostitute, in just in general, 7 attempts to get out of the life.
Wow.
You know, so
that's quite a stat there.
It is. And it's hard because I think a lot of us, we help them out and, you know, or if we could, we would help them out once. If they go back, that's on them. They chose it. It's over. But no, it's, you know, how many times did it take us as new Christians? And even still, if we have a bad habit, how many times does it take us to fight it off to make it through? You know, it's the same thing. We think it's a much more drastic situation, but it's the same thing. This has been their life for who knows how many years. It's all they've ever known. And for them to walk away, it's going to take a few times. And we just have to know that if they go back, we have to stick with it, support them, keep loving them, and be ready for the next time they want to get out.
So let's bring things to a close here. Well, 2 or 3 more questions here. Talk to pastors, talk to churches. I'll just speak as a pastor, and I think I could speak for a number of other pastors as well. Pastors are often approached by, whether it's parachurch organizations, people that are involved in good causes that want to come and speak at their church because there's an audience, right? And so they'll come and they'll speak at the church and they'll say, okay, you need to get involved, and they'll give them a website link, and then they're gone. And so maybe they make a little bit of money from the offering, and the church kind of feels good because they supported a cause, but then there's no follow-up, right? There's nothing that happens. And so let's just take our church, for instance. We'll just start where we're at. Discovery Point Church, East Scarborough, Ontario. What's one practical step that we can take to start making a difference?
I know it's hard because I know as being kind of that person that might come in and speak a lot of times, I mean, because you...
I've been there as well. Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
and especially with this issue, you don't want to be like, hey, go out and start engaging, because you're like, no, do not do that. You need to be trained. You need to be in a group. You need to really be... you need a lot of preparation, however that comes along. But I think there are ways for people who, like, we've been through an hour of discussion about this, who really want to get involved. There are ways. One group that I was involved with, I ran a group here, for a year. So it was called the Set Free Movement. It was the overarching, international group that I worked under. That's a Free Methodist organization, but I don't think only Free Methodist churches can join. And all it is individuals who want to sign up under this organization to start a group in your area. They provide resources, they provide leadership, and it's little pop-up organizations across the world that are fighting slavery, trafficking, and that's kind of another word I'm throwing in there, but it's all kind of interconnected. Mm-hmm. In your area. And so they will, you know, there'll be groups who are doing outreach. And that's how I did the outreach that we did, was through that group. You know, they'll provide you with those resources, and then you can get started, whether it's doing an outreach a couple months down the road, whether it's throwing a banquet for prostitutes in your area, whether it is, you know, this is a long shot. Whether it's starting a little coffee shop and a little storefront down the road where you can maybe start to offer exploited women a job. You know, there really is a lot of ways that I can't give right now, you know, in this short time frame, but there are ways for you to engage. And I would suggest checking out the Set Free Movement at setfreemovement.org. Kevin Austin is the leader of that, but he can give you some great resources for how to actually engage.
That's very helpful. That's great. And so where can people find you if they want to ask you questions? What's an easy way for them to find you?
Email is probably best. And I, my email is jonesintern1. So it's jonesintern1@gmail.com. And then I'm on Facebook, but yeah, I mean, people can, I love helping people, getting started with the stuff. And if people want to plan events, I love planning events. If people want to ask questions, if they want to pretty much anything, I'd love to help.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's contact.
Well, and if you're listening, that's if you want one of the first steps that I would offer, I would suggest that you constantly just email or contact Emily. Because I'm not as engaged in this area as you are. I think in order to keep that engagement, if you feel that God's speaking to you about this, that this is something that you'd like to get involved in and move past just the social media phase where we talked about where you occasionally post a link that you find helpful and you actually want to get involved, I think it's so important that you surround yourself with people that have that passion. So yeah. I would really encourage you to connect with Emily.
It is neat how God kind of, once we get connected to those other people around us who find people that we can connect with who are passionate about it. You know, like you said, pray like it depends on God and work like it depends on us. That is so true. And networking is an amazing thing. We can make some awesome connections that way.
All right, last question for you. The reason this is called the Monday Christian Podcast is because we want to help people put into action the truth of God's word that they hear on Sunday to their everyday lives on Monday. And that's just something that I'm passionate about. A lot of times there are what we call Sunday Christians. They kind of do their thing Sunday, and then the message of the gospel doesn't really impact their life throughout the week, just if we were to be honest. And so let me just ask you this. What's the type of Monday Christian that you most admire? What are their characteristics?
I think one group, and I tried to think more in depth about it, but one group that just kind of keeps popping up is people who love Jesus passionately. And whether that's, you know, they might be a pastor's wife, or they might just be someone who works at the bank, or you know, someone who sits in the pew on Sunday and has a regular day job. But, you know, the people that love Jesus passionately are going to engage people and love people in a way that is, it's more impacting than anything else that you can try to do. No matter what ministry you try to be involved with, if you passionately love Jesus, everything you do on a day-to-day basis is going to show that. It's going to reflect that. And I have a couple of people in my life right now who are like that. One's a stay-at-home mom. One's a pastor's wife. Another one's a stay-at-home mom. And they are so crazy about Jesus. And it's just, which is neat. Like, they want to talk about him all the time. They want to get together and have coffee and talk about him and talk about what he's doing. You know, and that's just, I love that because it builds you up and they impact people everywhere they go. So.
Right. That's awesome. Well, Emily, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. It was an honor to be on, and it was fun to talk about what I'm passionate about.
Well, there you have it. I hope this has been helpful to you. And if it has, I would just encourage you, if you're someone that's passionate about this and you want to get more involved, contact Emily, like I talked about earlier. You can contact her with her contact information. We'll link to that in the show notes so you can get it there as well. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you all again next week.
You've been listening to the Monday Christian Podcast, the program dedicated to helping you put into action the truth of God's word that you hear on Sunday to your everyday life on Monday. For more info on this program and other resources that can help you grow stronger in your walk with God, simply visit our website, mondaychristian.com. That's mondaychristian.com.